Hello and welcome. I'm Simon.
And I'm Tony.
We are knee-deep in tech, covering the latest from the IT industry with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 130, recorded on September the 3rd, 2020. You will be able to find this in our previous episodes on kneedeepintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, and on most podcasting platforms. And today's headlines are: Microsoft Ignite's registration has opened. What to expect? We will be talking about Surface, both smaller ones and bigger ones. And we will also look into the latest insider builds from both Windows and Windows Server. And if we have time, we have a couple of other smaller news items as well.
Smaller. Sure, smaller. About that.
Yeah, sort of. Depends. And we have lost Alex. And he have lost his voice. So apparently he have been training all day and lost his voice. And me and Tony, of course, claims that that's due to high age.
Yeah, but still his handle, I think, is like Arctic DBA. So what has he been doing? Like screaming in the Arctic or something?
Could as well be. It was rainy this morning, at least in our town.
Scaring bears and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. All the Swedish bears. But let's start with Microsoft Ignite. The registration opened an hour ago.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't signed up yet. I've been in a meeting, but I will sign up. I apparently booked my renovation of our kitchen the same week, so I don't know how much I will be able to attend.
Oh, that's bad. That's very bad.
Yeah.
You're pretty much out.
Yeah, I know. And it's not that my employer hosts a hackathon that week, so I'm missing out on all the fun. Oh. But I will be destroying a kitchen. That's fun.
Well, that's therapeutic.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have spoken about our expectations for Ignite, and we can, I think, all agree on that. Yeah, it will be interesting to see what they announce, but we are really not as excited as we usually are. Like this time last year, we were all packing up, preparing all the things we were supposed to do, scheduling everything. And this year it's more about, okay, which chair should I sit in?
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true. Because, you know, as you're attending a physical event, you need to, you know, pack your stuff, plan for hotels, what you're going to wear, how much clothes you're going to bring with you, which computers, devices, and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So this time you're going to see me going from my bed, which is about a foot away from my computer. So wake up in the morning, sign in, and that's it. So now what?
And I think therefore it's my recommendations to anyone is to find your local or your online community and do something together for Ignite. After works... Just have some kind of like follow-up discussion. Okay, which sessions have you catched today? Was there anything good? To do something in addition to just viewing the actual event.
So kind of like an after-hours thing, but maybe even a pre-hour thing in some cases, I suppose.
Yeah, depending on the time zone, absolutely.
Sure.
So can we agree on that this year's Ignite, even though we aren't as excited, it will become as good as we, as a community, can do it.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have to step up our game in more than one way just to make this exciting for everyone this year, since it is such a limited event. 48 hours, yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Next up, Surfaces.
Oh, I know how you like those. And but wasn't that event already like a week or two ago?
Yeah, the Surface Duo is now long time ago announced and available for pre-order.
The announcement was like last Ignite, so yeah, that was like 2019.
Yeah.
But I know that they made the devices available just recently, right?
Yeah, that's true. But we haven't been able to talk about them because they're when they announced or actually made it available to pre-order, they also announced the hardware and the configurations of them. And I got quite a lot of very upset people that said that, okay, they are releasing a phone that are using last year's technology due to the lack of 5G, the lack of a super amazing camera, things like that.
But that might actually not be true, right? Because these are the preview units that have gone out to reviewers or something like that, as I understood it. So the actual final hardware might be a step up.
No. The thing you will be receiving don't have 5G.
Okay.
And it won't have any like super awesome triple, quadruple cameras.
Yeah, or even the latest processors, as I understood it.
Yeah. But then I ask myself, if you buy a Duo, and it's a very expensive device, is it $1,400 or $1,200?
I think 14, so, yeah. That's the one that struck me as well.
Yeah. So it's a very expensive device. But are you really buying a Duo to get an awesome phone? Because I wouldn't. I wouldn't ditch my phone if I had a Duo. To me, the Duo would be in instead of an iPad or instead of a Surface Go or something like that.
You would be buying it just because it has the Surface brand. Let's be honest about that.
I have bought $1,000+ Surface just because of the brand. I think that's enough. But the price point and that it would be a secondary device to me will probably mean that I won't get one. But I don't think that anyone who sees the power in those dual screens should refrain from it due to the lack of five cameras or 5G. Because that, in my opinion, isn't what that phone is all about.
That's very true, actually, and I can agree with that. However, I also have some kind of like a mental, you know, block in my head for some weird reason in regards to, let's say, it's not correct to actually call them phones in this age anymore. But for some reason, I have like a mental block in my head that says don't ever buy a mobile device that costs more than X. And that is pretty much like somewhere in the $800-$900 limit, I suppose.
Yeah.
And the same goes for graphics card as well. We can maybe get back to that later, but there is like a mental limit for how much I'd like to spend on a graphics device. That might change in the future, but it's been like this for like 2 decades now, so I'm not sure if it's going to change that fast, at least. But that's another discussion for maybe later, maybe next time.
And currently it's officially only available for the US market, but I know a couple of my European friends that have purchased them and will be getting them over to Europe somehow, because apparently there's nothing that technically limits them from working in Europe. So I'm really looking forward to see that. And you can't ignore that it's a fantastic piece of engineering, really.
The hardware looks absolutely stunning and excellent in every single way, I think. The little we have seen this far.
Yeah. So let's move to another device that's way too expensive to buy only for the logo. The Surface Hub.
Ah, your favorite subject.
Yes. And there have been a lot of improvements, actually, to the Surface Hubs over the last couple of weeks. We'll have to dig deeper into that another time. But... And I will quote our show notes. Windows 10 Pro and Enterprise available for Surface Hub 2. And just to clarify, these are my show notes that I've written. Who did it? Microsoft. When? This week. Why? You tell me. Who is affected? Surface Hub 2 owners and buyers. How? Stupid? Or not so stupid idea? So those are my show notes. So
do you have any comments on those show notes?
Yeah, I will actually add some context to them. So as you may be aware of, and our listeners may be aware of, the Surface Hub runs a specialized Windows 10 version. So it's Windows 10. The core is Windows 10, but it's a Windows 10 Teams device. And that's always been a selling point for them because it's super hardened. It's done to work exactly as you expect for the device. It's very, very stable, very secure, and just works brilliantly. But now you are able to install traditional operating systems on them. So you are able to install the regular version of Windows 10 Pro or Enterprise on the Surface Hub 2.
Okay, so now I can understand your question, why, you tell me. Because, yeah. I mean, manageability, maybe, but wasn't the original one still pretty well managed as well?
Absolutely. So my thinking, and we'll get back to why, all the reasons why I think it's a stupid idea, but look at it. You purchase a very expensive device and you want to manage it or use it somehow for your organization. And that may include that you want to run your specialized, like your custom-made line of business app. You may run like a collaboration app that isn't available or whatever it may be. You want to do more than the operating system allows you to do, since the Teams operating system only allows for Microsoft Store apps. So I can get why, but you're also then taking care of everything with it because it will become a regular Windows 10 device. And therefore, I question, would you buy a device that's that expensive, that specialized, and then get rid of the thing that makes it special?
So you mean you could pretty much just buy like a media PC for cheap with Windows 10 Enterprise and just buy a humongous screen and do the same thing?
Like a 4K or 8K touchscreen with a Windows 10 device, a great camera. Yeah, you wouldn't get the battery pack, which I can get, and you wouldn't get the, it's a great looking device and all of that. But to me, it doesn't make sense. And in fact, what you could have done is basically put a small PC on the back of the Surface Hub and pass it through to the Surface Hub. That would work just brilliantly.
Yeah, just like a Nook PC or something. And you see Intel, some cheap, you know, pretty much fanless design thingy.
And I absolutely understand if some of our listeners would get back to me, but you don't get the point. And sure, there are absolutely valid reasons to do so. It's just that one of the things that I really think is the benefit of it is the operating system and the simplicity, the manageability, the security of that operating system. And now you get to take care of everything with it. And it will just be a regular Windows PC, but that did cost you three times as much as it probably had needed.
Yeah, sounds about right. Well, let's just wait and see what they actually come up with in the end. Trying to move to the next point in hand.
Yeah, so we'll see. So we have been trying out some insider builds, both for Windows Server, which I think we should start with, because that's of most interest and you have been most hands-on with that. And we also have some new Windows 10 client insider builds. So you have been doing some work with the vNext release of Windows Server.
That is correct. And I mentioned that last week as well, I think, that I had downloaded the ISO. And now I have had a chance to actually install it on my, let's call it my home lab Hyper-V host.
Yep.
And mostly the installation was smooth as expected. So I think the installation took about 20 minutes.
Did you then do an in-place upgrade?
Yeah, that was an in-place upgrade. Correct.
Yeah.
So, but after about 25 minutes, I was still not able to ping the machine. So I was getting, you know, suspicious that something might have not gone as expected. So I logged on locally to the Hyper-V box. Everything there seemed fine, except that I had no external access to anything at all. Okay, so this points me straight away to the networking issue, driver issue, something like that, which showed that, the network card driver had not migrated over properly or been upgraded properly. So yeah, the machine was working just fine, just with no external network connections. That, you know, that little issue being a Hyper-V server. So
I think in general that a working network card that can't access the network isn't useful for anything.
Yeah, but you know, locally the VMs were just fine. So I mean, that worked. And yeah, yeah. So besides those 20 minutes doing the upgrade, it took me around an hour just to, you know, get the correct driver downloaded. And I had to actually manipulate that driver as well to be able to install it, which I find a bit strange. But this is a known issue around the internets and tubes and stuff. So Intel has, and this is an Intel network card, mind you, even that. So there is a series called the 210, 211, 217, 218, I think they are called, something like that. So they are mostly, I suppose, workstation level cards. So they're not like super data center server cards, but still they are not basic consumer cards either. So they are like workstation cards. And Windows Server 2016 and 19 does not include drivers for those for some weird reason. So they will also always show up as unknown device. But I had the driver installed prior to doing the upgrade, so that's also a bit weird. Why did it get pushed out and not recognized? So yeah, it took like an hour again to download the drivers, firstly from my motherboard provider. Yep. And those are, of course, mostly consumer oriented. So that just said, this is not Windows 10, go screw yourself. Okay, so then I turned to Intel and looked up the exact chip, download the drivers for that, and they said, I don't recognize your NIC. I don't recognize your network card. Okay, so I had to do like some weird hack thing, you know, write my own Windows setup file, the INF, copy that to a USB, put that in the server, and then disable driver signing to be able to install that because I had manipulated the INF. But once all that was done and done with, then it worked just fine again. So that was a little hiccup in my home lab environment. I'm not expecting enterprises to see these kind of issues. That would be laughable, actually. But yeah, in my specific home lab environment, I actually stepped onto this landmine again because I remember all of this, installing the Threadripper machine from the first time. But I wasn't expecting an upgrade to actually, you know, fall back on that.
No, I think that's quite interesting. I mean, I'm not entirely certain of how it would handle that. That if it has an unsigned driver, that it wouldn't migrate it. I think it really should, because you have validated it since you have actually been running it for a while, probably.
X years. So,
yeah, exactly. So I find that quite interesting. It would be even more interesting if you just wanted to wipe that box and reinstall it from scratch and see if it works if you don't do an in-place upgrade. So could you do that?
Well, it's just an home lab machine, so I suppose I can reset that at any time. It's not like it's backed up or anything. I mean, it's just for shits and giggles and for labs and tests and trials. So it's nothing important to me at all.
But it takes time.
Sure.
Yeah, so please don't do it, but it would be interesting to know how it works.
Sure.
So for Windows, we, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago that they announced that the 20H2 release is getting closer. So the fall release, the release with the longest support cycle for the ones who run Enterprise, and that one will be similar to the 1909 upgrade from 1903. So it should be a very, very smooth upgrade for most organizations that have been able to upgrade to 20H1.
Yeah, and like I was just saying, the install that I did just now was the long-term release as well.
Yeah, for the vNext one.
Yeah, so the vNext for the long-term release, so not for the branch.
Yep. But that's coming out, and the latest release is, let's see, for that one is the 19042.487, and that includes mostly fixes, which also points towards that it's almost here, so we should be seeing it, I would guess, post-Ignite. I don't think they have the focus needed to get that out prior to Ignite, so I would guess after Ignite. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty much all of Microsoft is now pretty much focused on getting the Ignite thing right, done right.
Yeah. And then we also have the latest Insider release, which should then be the 21H1 release, or whatever they desire to call that when it's done. So the build 2206, which was released yesterday, where we have a new emoji picker.
Oh, that's important stuff.
Yeah, but also quite a lot of improvements to voice typing and accessibility. And I think that, yeah, I'm fortunate enough not to have the need to use any accessibility items, but I find them fascinating. And I really like to see how creative Microsoft can be in terms of how they are using it. So I remember when I had the Tobii eye tracker bar, and how stunned I were of how simple that one was to actually navigate the operating system with, and how well it worked.
Yeah, and that must have been years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago or something like that. And it's still there.
Not more than that then.
No, I think it was 2 years ago.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure I've seen like eye tracking products for like 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, they have been around for quite a while, but I have... it was integrated in Windows 2 years ago. So previously you needed to have some other kind of software, but with, I believe it was the 1809 release, Microsoft included eye tracking by default.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So I think we have time. We should be talking a bit more about community as well to finalize things, but we have a couple of other news items as well. I think one thing that really baffled us were an acquisition that especially impacts you since you're using one of the tools still, I believe. So Quest bought or acquired Binary Tree, which is basically like if Mercedes would acquire BMW, but in the world of AD migration.
Sure, I can go with that. Because, yeah, that was a huge bombshell for me to just see that Business Wire article that it is actually happening. Because I always thought that, you know, the Binary Tree made a better product and they were also very successful with it. They kept growing and growing substantially, you know, year to year with their software. Also, I am, you know, suppose I'm still certified in their AD Pro software at least. And then to hear that, you know, the old guys, the Quest guys, which have been around for like since the, I don't know, 60s or something, to go in and buy up Binary Tree, that was a huge bombshell. And I'm not actually sure how I feel about that. But then again, I have actually never had a personal relationship with any of Quest's products, other than that I know that they've been around for forever, pretty much.
Yeah.
And that their products were at least relevant until, I think, Windows 2000 or something. But pretty much since then, I've heard nothing of their products other than everything is just legacy. If you, you know, stand on one foot and raise your hat, it just might work on a newer generation or something. My experience. That's what I've heard. I said, I still haven't had like a personal connection with the software, so I can't really be sure. However, Binary Tree has been like in the absolute forefront of making everything work all the time, even the absolute newest generation of operating systems, AD Trust, and whatever it might be. They certify their products in pretty much months just to make sure that we have tested this, we know it works. Here is our next version. Go ahead. Don't worry about it.
No. And I find it quite interesting because we have been working with Binary Tree quite a lot recently. And I don't know if I can remember an acquisition that were so where it must have been, we need to buy our biggest competitor. And I wonder how. So to me, I've been involved in a couple of different discussions for various reasons in terms of acquiring companies and acquiring technology. And there are some companies that I would say, yeah, that company will never, ever be acquired by their competitor, because that's not the mindset of the founders or the owners or whatever it may be. And I don't know how Binary Tree were owned, if it was like a private equity or something like that, or if it were the founders that actually still were owning it. But I find it quite, and it also impacts the competition, because there aren't that many other alternatives other than those two.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's very much what's worrying me right now as well. But however, if we're just looking at, you know, the near future, so as long as I can get the Binary Tree software that they have developed and I have my trust in them, that's fine. If the logo changes from Binary Tree to Quest, I'm not going to care about that, not even the least. As long as the Binary Tree software keeps moving forward as they have all these years until now. So I'm not too afraid, but it still worries me that, you know, Quest was the one that bought them.
It would honestly have made more sense if Microsoft would have bought them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because ADMT is long gone. So just buy Binary Tree, Microsoft, and make their software free. Oh, even better.
Yeah, they've done that previously. So I would like to, before we start to summarize today, Salesforce, Azure AD, single sign-on, and more, and then InfoSec.
That's pretty much my daily work. So I have been integrating even more applications into Azure AD for single sign-on. That's included another instance of Salesforce. But also why I wrote InfoSec in there is because it's an actual application that was called InfoSec something or other. You know, it's not the InfoSec you're thinking of. But it was an actual security application that was called InfoSec something. So that was actually my colleague that did most of the work, but since he didn't get it 100% working, he gave me a call and we fixed it in pretty much like half an hour or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and as always, it's a claims issue, because what else would it ever be? It's always a claims issue.
And I find that just to summarize that and start to move into the community activities, I think that the Azure AD integration of applications is something that we'll see much, much more in the wider community, since it's actually part of InfoSec that you should have as few identities as possible. That's actually a increased security other than having unique accounts for each.
Yeah, and that is actually one of the reasons that I got employed with Sinch since generally last year, because I was the one actively promoting this, you know, single user identity since the middle of last year, pretty much. Because at that time they had like 50 or something. I don't know. I might be exaggerating a little, but you get the point. They had many.
Yeah.
So that was an issue, and it still is an issue to some extent, but. My main goal is to absolutely try to minimize the amount of user IDs that you have throughout the whole enterprise, forest, everything, as much as possible. I know it's never going to be just one identity, but, you know, that's the goal. That's the target. That's what we should strive for.
Yeah. So before we end the show for today, I saw that Alexander also have something to clarify next time. He's teaching the DP300 course, and the comment is absolutely useless slides. So we'll get back to that.
Sounds interesting.
And on the community notes, I hosted, together with the other founders, the first Swedish Windows Virtual Desktop user group yesterday, which went great. I think we became the biggest one, at least in Europe, for the first meetup. And possibly in the world. So it was a great turnout, 46 people, great, great content. So thank you everyone who showed up for that. And the coming weeks is packed. So I'm very happy to announce, and this is the first time I'm able to announce it, that I will be speaking at the Jamf Nation User Conference, possibly as the only non-Apple native speaker. And
what? Native Apple speaker?
Yeah.
How do you speak Apple? Is that a language?
It's a language for sure. So it's the world's biggest Apple conference, external Apple conference. And I'm one of the speakers, so I'll be talking about the partnership between Microsoft and Jamf for Mac management. I'm also speaking at the German WVD user group in 2 weeks, and I'll be speaking about the security of WVD, so how to secure both the platform and the access to it. Then we have Alexander is speaking at the Glasgow Azure user group, building an empire with Power BI and data management. And then I have 2 upcoming speaking engagements. First, Teams Fest and how to secure Teams with Microsoft 365 on October the 7th. And I will also be speaking at Teamsdagen in Stockholm on October 14th. So we have plenty of things going on.
Sounds like it.
And on that...
Something shell?
Pie shell? It's time to end the show. Thank you for listening to Knee Deep in Tech. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be a part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@kneedeepintech.com. We will hopefully be back, and Alexander's voice will hopefully be back next week. Meanwhile, take care. Bye.
Bye now.